presents the News Quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome to, sadly, the last programme in the present series of the News Quiz. We start with a notice from the Sussex University Bulletin, read by Charlotte Green.
Before you throw anything away, please think of the creche. We need towels, shelving, toys, and in particular, a guillotine.
Thank you, everyone, who sent us that. Well, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, the well-known lefty Francis Ween and Roy Hattersley. Facing them on my left, writer, broadcaster, and currently the devil himself, Andy Hamilton, and Cricklewood's answer to Gore Vidal, the slim and lovely Alan Corran. Before we start round one, here's a story spotted in The Independent.
A man in Toronto was charged with driving while under the influence of alcohol after he'd driven to a police station in order to ask them whether he was sober enough to drive. He also hit a police car when parking.
Anyway, Francis, you get the first question, and it's this. Which members want to keep mum with extra cash?
Lord Nolan produced a report a while ago saying that MPs should declare their outside earnings. And John Major said, jolly good, quite agree. And now John Major says he doesn't agree at all. He's done a bit of a Clare short on it, I think. It's been drawn to his attention that some of his backbenchers are not averse to the odd bung. And, allegedly. So he's now saying that they must vote against disclosure of MPs' earnings. And the odd thing is it's become a party issue. Labour is very keen on this and the Tories are against it. The idea being that Labour MPs, according to Michael Heseltine, are incapable of earning any money outside the House.
It's true.
Which
it's true.
I should have thought was disproved by the other member of my team, but...
Who has a book that's just published.
He has a book published this week, but he wasn't paid for it.
Can't remember the title. Can you remember the title, Francis?
I can, yes.
What is it?
It's called Who Goes Home? In all good bookshops now, heavily discounted, because the author receives no royalties under the new Nolan rules.
That's partly right.
The thing about this story that's... My jaw dropped when I was watching this story being covered on the TV, because there was an MP, and he said that the reason they can't implement the four rules on disclosure is that it would stop talented people entering Parliament. And when we all full know that in fact there's an alarm which goes off the moment a talented person enters that building.
Let me say, Barry, I don't believe there's an alarm that goes off when any talented person goes in. I've certainly never heard it myself.
Quite right, Francis. This is the Nolan Report on Sleaze, available free to MPs, but to the rest of us for £25 and no questions asked. The report concerns MPs' salaries and how much they earn. The answer is about half of it. Roy, your question now. Who had change for the phone, but not for the voters?
Oh, it's about those funny French people in Quebec. Is it?
Yeah, it's a hoaxer.
Who phoned and pretended to be the Prime Minister of Quebec and was in fact a journalist, which, as Francis and I agree, is a very low form of life. And he pretended to be the Prime Minister and he had a long conversation with the Queen in which he agreed, rather surprisingly I thought, as a constitutional historian, to make a speech in favour of Quebec not seceding from the Union, thereby denying the heritage that goes back to General Wolfe. Do you want any more?
No.
Right. Well, I think the point's been missed because everyone said, how could the Queen be fooled by this? But obviously what happened was her private secretary said to her, we've got the Prime Minister on the phone, Your Majesty, and she assumed it was Major. And then this idiot comes on the phone saying, what are you doing for Halloween? And babbling about cornflake packets and things. And she thinks, oh, yes, well, it obviously is Major. I think Tuesday night audiences with her. He says, have you seen on the back of Cocoa Pops now, they have these special
the
vouchers.
And the Major parallel, it's two people pretending to be Prime Minister in one week. It's
absolutely
extraordinary, isn't it?
Whereas the Canadian Prime Minister is called Jean Chrétien, unlike our Prime Minister.
Andy, who was given a short shrift and told to keep off the grass?
This, I believe, is Clare Short.
Yes.
Who had the temerity to suggest that possibly our policy on drugs was not all it might be on the David Frost programme. She dropped her guard on the David Frost programme. And as far as I could tell, all she said was that maybe the problem was worth looking at or something like that. And, of course, what happened was that in the disciplined regime of Tony Blair, he was round there with his boys... the following morning, and he let it be known to all and sundry via that creature, a spokesman, that he, you know, he's duffed her up and sorted her out, and she won't do it again. And she apologised. She said she shouldn't have spoken out of turn. She shouldn't have had opinions of her own, obviously.
Well, what she also said was this royal commission she wanted to see should be staffed by former chief constables and archbishops.
Retired
archbishops. She said experts on the subject of cannabis, like retired archbishops.
But have you seen the way they dress? The Labour leadership quickly refuted Miss Short with its policy on soft drugs. Labour should be careful. A policy on soft drugs can lead to a policy on hard drugs, and then a policy on education. And before they know it, they'll have developed a manifesto. Helen, will you have a listen to this?
Streets full of people, all alone. Roads full of houses, never home. Church full of singing, out of tune. Everyone's gone to the moon.
Very nice, too. Your question is, how was a moon landing cancelled unlawfully?
I think this is a question about a silly cult, and it involves Michael Howard.
Ah.
There is a group of greedy, self-seeking madmen who make bogus promises to fools in the hope of persuading them to their cause. And their spokesman is Michael Howard. And he wants to keep the Moonies out of Britain because they can't stand comparison. It's rather like James Goldsmith's party. If the Moonies come in, people will vote for them instead of voting for Conservatives. It's a man called Sun Moon. Well, he's very clever, that. I wonder when he was born, when Mr. and Mrs. Moon produced this child. Instead of saying, you call him Keith or Roy, you call him Sun. It's very odd, because he isn't even English, but there we are. And Michael Howard's in terrible trouble, because the Lord Chief Justice, quite sensibly, would much prefer to see Moonies than Michael Howard any day of the week, because he does see Michael Howard every day of the week, who comes in with a new clause for his criminal justice bill or some other piece of nonsense. Their lordships want the Moonies to be here, and they want the Conservatives to shut up, which I think goes for all of us.
Yes, that's pretty comprehensive. Of course, the Moonies sect is based upon mass weddings where thousands of couples say, I do, together, and then relinquish their worldly goods to the church. At the last one, Mr. Moon got 36,000 toasters. Lucky devil. And scores at the end of the first round, why would they be any different? They've been exactly like this since 1979, when I first came on the programme. Tied at 4-4. Francis, who supported a bonne surprise, fait accompli?
Is this anything to do with Monsieur Chirac?
It is.
He came over here this week.
He did.
He claimed to be Chirac. It's probably some hoax or other. To have a meeting with Major, and it's very odd, because only about 3 or 4 weeks ago, Michael Portillo made that speech to the Tory conference saying, Britain stands alone, we fight alone against the Hun and the Frog and all the rest of it.
Right.
And then over comes Monsieur Chirac to sign a new defence cooperation deal. John Major, and I noticed the Defence Secretary, Michael Portillo, was nowhere to be seen in any of the photographs I saw, maybe lurking at the back with a berm. But he made himself pretty scarce. But anyway, it was all lovey-dovey, and Chirac actually called John Major Mon Cher Jean. I thought it was a bit frisky of him. Poor old Major had to go off and look it up in his Collins Gem.
I'm not sure Michael Portillo comes out in photographs, does he? What I thought was intriguing about this story, though, was that it was all about how we're going to cooperate and share nuclear technology with the French and all this sort of stuff. But they said it was important for both sides to keep their independent nuclear deterrent. Now, logically, that raises the possibility that we could still have a war with France. So we just keep our bond just in case, you know.
Right. What sporting home tie has gone to extra time?
What sporting home tie has gone to extra time?
Oh, my God, your hearing's good.
On the left-hand side this time.
Look, it's Manchester bloody Wembley.
Oh, thank you. Manchester bloody Wembley. You think that's a clue, do you?
Not the bloody answer, you fool.
You think if you say that, I'll say the people who were deciding on the National Stadium haven't yet decided whether it should go to Wembley or whether it should go to Manchester.
That's what I was expecting.
You thought I'd say that, yes, if you gave me the clue. Well, I'm not going to. You should have gone to Sheffield, you know.
Of course it should. Yes.
So I'd speak at a Birmingham MP.
Sheffield made such a success of the student games a few years ago that I can't think why they were left off the shortlist.
We made success of them. England won. When did England last win anything?
Yep.
Sheffield arranged that.
They did. How many million pounds did it cost? I can't remember.
Well, that just shows what a patriot you are, Ween. How many million pounds you're prepared to spend for England just to win something in Sheffield? We're real patriots.
A bronze medal in the synchronised swimming at the Sheffield Student Games of 1980-something or other.
Oh, be fair.
Who could forget it?
A silver medal in the synchronised swimming. Ladies synchronised swimming.
Not the mixed synchronised swimming, because all hell breaks
loose. We don't have that sort of dirty talk in Sheffield.
It's more fun than you'd think, isn't it, really?
It's the way I pretend not to know the answers, you know.
No, I know.
It's years of parliamentary training.
Of course it is. It's the news that Manchester and Wembley will have to wait another 6 months before they learn that the new national sports stadium will be built in Wembley. Andy, here's a piece of music for you. School's Out by Alice Cooper ushers in your question, which is, what's closing down on the Downs?
Right, I think this is a reference to the story whereby the government have decided to close down a school because Michael Caine went there. Michael Caine went to Hackney Downs, I think that's correct. He went to Hackney Downs.
Not a lot of people know that.
He was...
Hackney Downs, where they know hardly anything at all.
anyway, the hundreds of school inspectors went in and decided that the standards fell below the targets that had been set by Ofbuk or Ofed or whatever regulatory body, and they felt that the only answer was to close Hackney Downs down, which they're doing, and I think the children are being moved to another school, and... You can't help wondering whether it was a bit of a political move to look tough on education by closing the school down, but it's just the cynic in me says that.
This is the Hackney Downs Comprehensive, one of Britain's worst schools, which is to close at the end of the year, just after the GCSE shoplifting practical. However, the school's reputation for toughness was refuted by ex-head girl Stephen Burkhoff. Thank you, Stephen, in our audience tonight. Alan, what criminal act is the result of daylight robbery?
I was hoping we'd have my favourite one of the week, which was the KGB infiltrated the White House. Isn't that wonderful?
No.
To spread disinformation to Ronald Reagan. How little the Russians know. What was that, daylight robbery?
Yes, criminal act, the result of daylight robbery. It's a legislated thing.
I don't know anything about that.
That's
the answer. At all. Are you telling me that if criminals commit a criminal act,
yes,
their goods can be impounded,
yes,
under Section 14,
yes,
and that their television sets and their wives and children, yes, and their chattels. And their oxen and their,
that's right,
maidservants and all that attaches thereto,
oh, really,
can be taken away?
Have you got
I think that's awful. I think it might well stop them being criminals. A whole new crowd of people are going to be shoved onto the labour market. I mean, what we need is criminals. We don't want people not being allowed to be criminals. Michael Howard's built all these wonderful new prisons with all my money. What are they going to do? Bloody stand empty. I think we're encouraging people to crime. So, yes, this is a move to take everything away from these poor so-and-sos for doing nothing more than knocking over a bank.
Quite right.
I think they've suffered enough.
Have you ever thought of having Michael Howard on this programme?
No, it's an interesting thought.
Every time he gave an answer, a judge would get up in the audience and say it was wrong, wouldn't it?
This is the new legislation, which means criminals can be stripped of everything, even their cabinet posts. Under the new Proceeds of Crime Act, repeat offenders risk being portrayed by Phil Collins in a film. And the scores at the end of round two are quite interesting. Of course, Francis and Roy have got 8, but Alan and Andy, thanks to his wonderful Portillo joke, have got 9. We start round 3 with a rugby report in Tame Gazette.
With the match deadlocked at 6-all, the game turned Chinna's way when Bista player Stuart Cassidy was dismissed after foreplay in the 42nd minute.
Francis, here's a piece of music for you.
Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. No, no, no. Don't sit under the apple tree.
Well, that was Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree by the Andrews Sisters. And your question is, whose family tree will be her chosen resting place?
I sometimes think that I live in a different universe. Because I made the mistake of following the news this week, rather than the news from some years ago or from this parallel universe in which all these strange things happen. But I imagine this is somebody, and we'll get there in the end by a process of elimination, animal, vegetable or mineral, who has decided that they want to be buried under an apple tree. So we've got that established. Now it's just a matter of who. 50 million names to come. Stop me when we get to the right one. Barbara Cartland.
Right.
Yeah? Barbara, it always is, isn't it? You just know when you hear that.
That's a brilliant guess, mate. That really is great. You deserve to win that. I'll try and fix the score. It was Barbara Cartland, yeah. This is dangerous ground, ladies and gentlemen. It's all about Dame Barbara Cartland, who says she wants to be buried under a tree in the garden. Any volunteers?
Yes.
It's all about Dame Barbara Cartland, who says she wants to be buried under a tree in the garden. Well, they do say that chalk is good for heavy soil. The tree in question... The tree in question was planted by Queen Elizabeth I, which is deeply significant for Dame Barbara. She never got her shovel back. Roy, where would you get on with a conversation piece?
Do you know about
your
this?
Partner can help you on this one.
There's a new television channel called the Sci-Fi Channel. Do you know about this? It's not this Rupert Murdoch porn channel.
Not this Morgasm channel.
No,
which
not
we're
that.
Not going to talk about.
Not the Playboy channel, not any of those Rupert Murdoch ones with truck stop women and when Barbara Cartland undresses and the films with titles like that on them. This is something called the Sci-Fi channel.
No, it isn't.
It jolly well is, and they're advertising. I think you'll find.
Look, I'm the chairman, I'll say whether it's right or not.
All right. But
I've got it written down.
The answer is, you've been given the wrong answer. The right answer is Sci-Fi Channel is promoting itself by installing speakers at bus stops.
Thank you.
And as you approach the bus stop, this thing automatically clicks on and drones this advert at you. So, I mean, given that people don't just wait for buses at bus stops, but they canoodle and do other things, they're going to be interrupted every time they get going by somebody saying, watch Star Trek tonight.
That's right. This sad jerk, David McCallum, saying, I used to be somebody. I used to do the man from Uncle, and I was Ilya Kuryakin, but now all the only work I can get is a talking bus stop.
The answer is talking bus stops, which could also be an ITV game show. It's the first in a series of advertising ideas involving spoken messages relayed through bus shelters. You can hang about for a new advertising idea for years, and then three stupid ones come along together. The designers say you can be entertained with the spoken word while waiting for your bus. The first one got through most of War and Peace before a number 73 arrived. Andy, why are feet and itches not to be sniffed at? unsavoury story of the week.
Aha.
Well, you think I'm winding you up?
Well, I have to be careful here that Alan isn't setting me up, but he suggested to me that mosquitoes like people with smelly feet.
They do.
Apparently. But I found that nets keep them away pretty well, so... Is that the story? Mosquitoes? Yes. Not a huge problem in England, is
it?
It's
really,
presumably some foreign place where they have hot, humid feet.
Well, it's not even that, it's Holland.
Holland?
No, they found it out in Holland. It doesn't happen in Holland.
It's an agricultural university.
Scholes was a Dutchman.
No, but the problem
the
around...
feet in Holland, you can eat your dinner off of them. I'm not going to hear this. It's another Portillo speech, isn't it? It's the university in Holland discovered it, but they didn't discover it in Holland. They went to horrible foreign places.
No, but they were using Dutch cheese, Limburger, or whatever it's called.
No.
On their
yeah,
feet.
No.
Limburger?
They used it as a foot substitute to see the mosquitoes.
What are you saying? Your own partners produce cheese that smells like feet.
Yeah.
And attracts mosquitoes.
Mosquitoes couldn't tell the difference between a smelly foot and a lump of cheese. And so you might think from that, they deduced, that you could deter mosquitoes by putting a bit of cheese at the end of the bedroom and it would go for that.
They weren't
your
very
feet.
Smart.
But apparently, if you leave a bit of Dutch cheese out overnight, it develops a film around it, which stops it smelling, so the mosquitoes go back to your feet.
Well, why can't
why your
feet
don't
that?
Develop a film, I don't know.
Why then, Francis, do they always bite you on the ear?
Because you have smelly ears, perhaps.
This is dreadful. There are going to be hundreds of people all over the country leaving bits of cheese outside the window, aren't there? All the hypochondriacs are going to be putting
people
cheese
out. People who want
out.
Pet mosquitoes.
Yeah. Dreadful.
A mosquito is not just for Christmas, you know.
This is the research that proved mosquitoes are mostly attracted to smelly feet. This was prompted after it was discovered that Bob Geldof had contracted athlete's malaria. Dutch researchers... Oh, please. Dutch researchers took an unwashed student, placed him under a net in only his underpants, and released mosquitoes on him one by one. The main trouble in setting up the experiment was finding volunteers. The mosquitoes were very reluctant. Anyway, Alan, who expected more of his right-hand man?
We're going for very... I mean, Francis is right. This one was in Nelson's Weekly.
It was.
Which hasn't been out since 1805. They had real printing difficulties. Sir Nicholas Lloyd's next job. Nelson is supposed to be an extremely nice man. But he wrote a reference for his servant, saying the servant really wasn't much good.
That's right.
He never find his glass eye of a morning, and was always saying, can I borrow the arm tonight? I've got this really terrific date. As a result of this, Nelson wrote a letter, which has now come up for auction at an enormous amount of money, and has completely changed our picture of Nelson, as being a man who really wasn't very good with his servants. Stood him in baths of water. Seeing which bit the mosquito would go for.
He wasn't much fun to his wife, was he, come to think of it, Nelson?
Well, yeah, one eye and one arm.
Can I just collect another £5 from my partner by mentioning there's a very good biography of Nelson, which
is
available in most public libraries still, I think. It's slightly mosquito-eaten now.
Who wrote that, do you suppose?
He was some chap, he's a Labour MP. Forget his name now.
Uh-huh. Did he write anything else more recently?
No.
All about a letter written by Lord Nelson in 1805. Well, he wouldn't write it in 1806, would he? That's ridiculous. Which came to light this week, but then they didn't have first-class mail in those days. It reveals that Nelson was a less-than-perfect employer, giving his faithful manservant a lousy reference. He says that Tom Allen was ungrateful and nagged the Admiral about his drinking. Tom got his own back by swapping Nelson's patch over to the other eye while he was asleep. Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis, have you brought a cutting?
This, Barry, is from the Bracknell and Ascot Times.
Oh, smart.
It's an apology. We wish to point out that Douglas John Legg, aged 46, of Berkshire Avenue, Wokingham, was not convicted of driving whilst disqualified, as stated in our court roundup. He was convicted of driving with excess alcohol. We apologise for any distress this may have caused Mr. Legg and his family.
Jolly good, Roy.
It comes from the Tamworth Gazette. And it reads, vandals have defeated attempt to upgrade a derelict former player in Tamworth by planting trees.
Andy.
This is a slightly longer cutting, but it's a beautiful visual picture from The Pilot magazine. Bored RAF pilots stationed at the Falkland Islands have devised what they consider a marvellous new game. Noting the local penguins are fascinated by airplanes, the pilots search out a beach where the birds are gathered and then fly slowly along the water's edge. Perhaps 10,000 penguins turn their heads in unison watching the planes go by. When the pilots turn around and fly back, the birds turn their heads in the opposite direction, like spectators at a slow-motion tennis match. Then, pilots fly out to sea and return directly towards the penguin colony and overfly it. Heads go up, 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 and then 10,000 penguins fall over gently onto their backs.
Thank you, Andy. Alan?
I've got a cutting from the Leamington Spa Courier.
Have you?
She's a Warwick motorist who drove into a police car travelling in the opposite direction. Told magistrates at Leamington last Friday that he had decided to risk driving home with only one contact lens in. The other one had fallen out in the pub and he'd been unable to find it. He had come to the conclusion that it had fallen into his beer and been swallowed, which was why he had subsequently refused to give a urine sample in case he did himself some damage.
No need to go on unless you wish. Go on.
The fragment here that I want to give, because it's about literacy in Sheffield, really, and because Roy Hatterley, whose new book is out, you see, it's a thing from the leader column in the Sheffield Star, I spotted. It says, as Oscar Wilde so movingly wrote, we are all in the gutter, but some of us are looking at the stairs.
Well, thank you all. Let's look at the final scores. There's no real problem there because Francis and Roy got a terrific 14, but Alan and Andy swamped us. They got 18 and won this week's quiz. Well, this is our last programme for the time being, and they each get their own radio series as a compensation, and the rest of us get a copy of Roy's book. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the big issue sent in by Cathy Trodd of Cornwall.
Employees of the Nairobi Bank were recently confronted by a man with a sack of coconuts. Jesus Watambi burst through the door, cried, "I never miss," and launched a coconut at a customer, hitting him on the head. Two more nuts were launched at cashiers before Mr. Watambi ordered staff to hand over their money. The sum of £3,000 was handed over, and Mr. Watambi ran into the street, where, unfortunately, he was run over by a passing lorry. "It's funny," said the driver. "Last week I hit a man carrying a bag of mangoes."
Oh, and with that, sadly, it is the end of the series, but goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Francis Ween, Andy Hamilton and Roy Hattersley. The chairman was Barry Took, and the news was read by me, Charlotte Green. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser Steele. The production assistant was Alison Harbert, and the producer was Aled Evans.